Welcome to Stutter Talk for October 26th, 2014. Our topic today is building relationships in stuttering treatment. I'm your host, Peter Reitzes. I'm a person who stutters and a speech language pathologist in Carrboro, North Carolina. On today's episode, I speak with Lee Caggiano and then with Dr. Phil Schneider. Lee Caggiano is director of the Stuttering Therapy and Resource Center of Long Island, a board-certified specialist and mentor in fluency disorders, the mother of a son who stutters, and co-founder and director of FRIENDS, the Association of Young People Who Stutter. Lee serves as a consultant to many school districts, as well as teaching the graduate-level fluency courses at New York University, Queens College, and Long Island University Post. So Lee, thanks for coming back on air to talk with me a little bit about stuttering.
Sure.
So I'm facing something at work, and I just want to run it by you to get your thought. And you know, I work in the public schools, so I get these individualized education plans for children who stutter with goals on them. And my job is to meet the goals and then to meet with the parents and the teachers and say how things are going. And my question in this topic is really on building relationships before working on speech.
Mm-hmm.
And this clearly is a topic that is rarely discussed, at least not in the school. So let me share with you a little bit about this student, a fourth grader with deep, deep shame about stuttering. So he'll pull his sweater over his mouth when he talks and when he stutters. He'll cover his mouth with his hand. He'll see me in the hallway and he'll run up and he doesn't want to stutter or speaking so hard at the moment that he just gives up and gives me a big hug and a smile. And he'll blush when he stutters. He loves to bring his friends to speech class, which I always encourage. And we end up playing games and laughing and talking. And the topic of stuttering will come up and he'll blush. And his friends will say, Mr. Reitzes is trying to help you with your stuttering. It's okay to stutter. It's okay to talk about stuttering. So his friends who don't stutter are totally cool with stuttering. And he's not. So we're playing a lot of board games. We're going for walks outside. We're hanging out with his friends and talking about stuttering. And this has been going on for about a year and a half. So for about a year and a half, I touch base with his stuttering. I feel like I'm poking a sore wound. He feels such deep shame. He puts his head in his shirt. Any mention of stuttering, he doesn't want to do it. Well, last week we came to speech class. We're just hanging out and talking. And he starts sharing some really painful personal stuff that's going on at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts sharing how reading in class is so hard, and he doesn't want to read in class. So I pulled a Robert Dellinger. I think you know Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Great speech therapist here in Wake County, and Robert stutters too. And Robert talks about asking permission. So I said to him, would it be all right with you if we worked a little bit on reading and stuttering? And he said, absolutely. So he went and got a book. And we started working on his stuttering and his reading and trying things like rate control. And for what it's worth, his stuttering was greatly reduced by reducing his rate. And I think he saw that. And now he's coming to speech class with a book. And we're talking about stuttering for pretty much the first time without shame. So I guess the question is for you, Leah, is I'm asking permission for you or for someone to tell me it's okay to just hang out for a while and not talk about stuttering and to just take walks and things with your students. What do you think about all this?
It's funny. I was gonna pull a Ludeman and say, well, what do you think about this, Peter?
Yeah.
But that's kind of where I want to go with this. It feels right to you, right for you to be doing that. You're with him. You have goals. Right? And your goal, one of your goals might be to increase his comfort speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's happening now.
Yeah.
By you being indirect about the stuttering, for him, that's what was needed. So sometimes you don't have to be talking about the stuttering to be looking at it, making it be a little more comfortable. I mean, you playing while you're throwing in a discussion of stuttering, or you're throwing in some stuttering, or just a comment, you put it out there and you step back, that's what he needed at that time.
Yeah, you know, I hope you're right. I think you're right. And it's tough because you touch base about the stuttering and you can see you're causing great discomfort to the student. And I feel obligated to keep touching base. And perhaps I touched base more than I had to, or who knows?
We don't always know, which is what makes it so, the work we do so difficult and so rewarding. What about asking him? He's fourth grader, you said?
Yeah, so started working together in the second grade and, about a year and a half of some pretty deep shame.
What does he want to do when he's with you? What does he want to do? What does he want from you?
He wants to play games and go for walks and, which, we don't go for walks all that often, but it's a special treat on a Friday afternoon. You take a walkie-talkie, you go for a walk in your beautiful school grounds, and he wants to bring friends to speech class and do things on the computer, and he wants to have fun, and
it's a tough decision to make because what you're doing feels right at the time, and then you've got that. I mean, I know when I'm in sessions, I'll get that nagging feel. I'm supposed to be working on the stuttering.
Exactly.
I'm supposed to be doing something about the stuttering.
Yeah.
And in private practice, I've got that nag. I'm getting paid to work on his stuttering.
Yeah.
And I try to step back and just look at that's my agenda. Lately, what I've been doing, even for the young kids, is when I have that conversation popping up into my head and I realize I'm now throwing in things that the kid may not be most comfortable with, I let them know. My job right now is to help you speak as easily as possible. Sometimes it doesn't feel like I'm helping.
That's really great.
See what he wants. I mean, I've had a young girl I see. I won't even tell anyone how long it's been. She started therapy. She would be great when we were doing anything or talking about anything other than stuttering. Literally, I would bring up stuttering or stuttering, let's play Stuttering Jeopardy. She would literally be under the table.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Put her head down. And I remember calling her mom after like a couple of months and saying, I feel really uncomfortable. She wants to come see me, so I'm not sure what that's about. It has to be somehow her wanting to come must have something to do with her ability to communicate, something she thinks will happen with us or some level of trust. I was really calling to apologize to the parents because I felt like I was being so unsuccessful. Best parents ever, and they said, this can take a while. We're willing to wait.
Well, I see. That's pretty
awesome. And they've waited. Yeah. It's been, we'd have a little, we'd be able to talk about studying, then she'd shut down. We're talking a long time that she can now come in and actually talk about studying without shutting down and being so fearful. But, it's a decision we have to make at that moment. What does the client need from us at that moment? But letting him talk about it, letting him kind of set the pace for what you're going to do, and there has to be some discussion of communication, something related to communication, and he's got to know that. It can't be, I don't know, I may regret saying this because I might have to rethink it. I don't want to be the place that someone's coming to avoid the topic, avoid the subject.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's a great point. And I think the reverse is happening. I think the reason that this young girl's coming back to you, and I think the reason that my student wants to bring his friends to speech class is because we've let them know that we're going to treat stuttering differently than other people. And it doesn't mean that they want to talk to us about it, at least, at that moment. But it means that we're the ones who look them in the eye and say the word stuttering and don't blink and don't whisper it. And I really do feel it's important to just hang out with our students who stutter and sort of go easy on them because
Yeah.
And And then here's the really hard question is, I get it and you get it, but parents and teachers often don't get it. And but, yeah, please.
You know, the clients, the students coming to hang with us, that's not our goal.
Right. Yeah.
It isn't. I mean, right. They're not coming. The purpose of them coming and us being there for them is not to hang. We do. You have goals.
Yeah.
Whether they be, maybe they're not even behavioral. Maybe they're affective or cognitive goals. And as long as you have specific goals in a treatment plan where the ultimate goal is to improve communication, even improve comfort communicating, as long as your goals are working towards that overriding goal, then hanging out can fit into that goal.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, and I'm sure I would have said it to you if this was the reverse. It's just
I'm sure you have.
Yeah, this image in my head of working on reading with this child a year ago, and them reading a passage from a book with the sweater over their mouth,
mm-hmm.
and now doing it now where they. It was like a flood opened. Like they can't list enough things that are going on in their lives that's challenging, and they want to talk about all of it. And
yeah.
It's kind of awesome, and I feel so much better about the work. You know, again, pulling a Robert Dellinger when I say, "Can we work on your reading now?" And they're like, "Absolutely, yes,
right,
we can."
Or
do that.
asking them what they want to work on.
Yeah,
and coming back to those goals again, because sometimes that just refocuses me when I start thinking, what am I doing here? I can't just go out and have ice cream with this kid. There has to be some other purpose to us both getting ice cream. If you've got the goals worked out, you can then include parents in those goals, teachers in those goals, that if you are reducing the fear of stuttering or increasing comfort, tolerating a discussion of stuttering, That goal can be worked out. You can go for a walk, and you're now talking about stuttering in the hallway, which is a step beyond talking about it in your little room.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, and I guess I needed to hear it. Sometimes, you know, you're working in the schools, and not many people think like we do in the schools. It's just my experience. So I'm glad to hear.
Not many people think like this anywhere.
Right. No, that's true. And, you know, if I really want to make inroads with this student, it's not going to happen by me being a drill sergeant and making him look at his stuttering for 30 minutes twice a week with no break and no fun. And, you know, I feel like I've earned some trust from him, which is starting to pay off.
Well, without that trust, you're not going to get anywhere. You won't.
Yeah.
You could sit there and drill to your heart's content. Nothing is going to sink in if that kid's not trusting you or trusting the process.
And is this your experience? It's my experience that there's such variability in shame at even this young age, where some kids in the second, third, and fourth grades just appear to be so good with talking about stuttering and being okay with talking to their friends about it. And then another student right down the hall will be the child who puts a sweater over his mouth and doesn't want anyone to see or hear him stutter.
Often to me, the hardest part about that is those kids who are covering their head are probably, possibly avoidant about other things in their lives. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes are coming from a family that's the way they handle things. They're avoidant. So the kid is covering his head. You know, stutter is not being talked about at home. Neither is difficulty with reading or anything else that might be, should be, could be talked about.
Well, that's an interesting point, and you know, this might diverge a bit, but in recent years, I've worked with some children who stutter with great shame about stuttering, and when you talk to the parents, and this is just generally speaking, about how the child really doesn't want to talk about stuttering right now, the parents almost see it as a discipline issue. Like, oh, well, he's going to work in speech class, and you let me know if he doesn't, because I will get him to work for you, and he will respect you. And it's like, well, it's not a matter of him not respecting me.
No, I had a second grader, first or second grader, who's still one of the most difficult kids I've ever worked with. I can't get in. I just don't know where we're going. He just doesn't want to be here. From day one, didn't want to be there. in speaking with Mom, Mom has made it clear to me that she has told him the stuttering thing is, quote, totally unacceptable.
Yeah.
That people might listen to you now, but when you get older, they will walk away.
Yeah. I've heard similar things. Yeah.
Given that dynamic, I'm still plugging away at both Mom and the young boy, just in opening up. And after letting Mom know that I'm not sure that I'm getting where, because he does not want to be here. You know, he'll play games. He does not want anything to do about talking about stuttering. And she brought him to the office and said, he'll be much different today. Mm-hmm. We had quite a talk.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, not going to do it. It's the same. It's perpetuating that same thinking. We don't have to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, just make the change. It's difficult, but I do think, and maybe I need to remember this with this client, I do think if we're focused on what our goals are, it helps us more. It allows you to know, it's totally therapeutic for that young kid right now for you to be walking around the halls and just laughing.
And it's also making me think, I mean, I always write the goals very carefully, but even writing them more carefully to specifically try to allow and include these types of speech classes, because we really need them.
That's what it's all about. You want him comfortable, period.
It's a good place to leave it, Lee. We want our students who stutter comfortable. I couldn't agree with you more.
I think we want all of us comfortable. All right, so on that note.
That too. It's hard for me to disagree with that either. Well, thanks again for coming back on air for this important discussion.
Always a pleasure. You take care.
Our next guest on today's program is Dr. Phil Schneider. Phil Schneider is a board-certified specialist and mentor in fluency disorders, an associate professor emeritus of communication disorders at Queens College, has been in private practice for more than 35 years, is an advisor to Stutter Talk, and with Ori Schneider is creator of the films Transcending Stuttering, The Inside Story, and Going with the Flow, a guide to transcending stuttering. I shared with Dr. Schneider my thoughts about my student, much as I shared them with Lee Caggiano. We will pick up the conversation when Dr. Schneider begins his response.
Well, first of all, I think a big bravo. You invest in relationships. People are ready for different things at different times. And we as the professionals don't determine when people are ready for different things. But if you stay in touch with a person and you stay invested in a giving way, in an unconditional way, he doesn't have to do anything for you to still care about him. It provides the future potential for him to have a partner when he is ready to talk about the stuttering, when he's ready to explore the stuttering, when he's ready to explore ways of speaking as far as his fluency or acceptance on the stuttering. I think that very often we take a very linear approach, and I think our profession has married this kind of behaviorist format, which is we say something, they follow through, and then we look for the results, we measure it and say, before, during, and after, you know, bing, bang, boom. But people grow and change in very nonlinear ways, and I think the key to maximizing effectiveness in growth and change is being there when people are ready, and when they're not ready, being there anyway in an unconditionally accepting way. And it sounds like this story is just a beautiful example of how you stayed present for him without needing him to do anything to make you feel justified. And then when he was ready, and then once in a while inviting, would you like to talk about this? And sometimes you don't even have to say it that way. You can tell that a person's not ready, but certainly if a person opens up and starts to talk to you about it, you use that opportunity to say, would you like to spend some time on this together? But if you had not maintained the relationship, he may not have been able to tell anybody that he'd like to talk about this more and explore it. So I think that, you invested in a very deep way, and, that's huge.
Thank you, Phil. And, I needed to hear that from you, because it's not a flavor that I hear enough in this work. And
no, because again, our work follows a very behaviorist model, and we're very much into this idea of identifying that you did something powerful, but that identifying is in the short realm. You're a parent, and there are many things you do and say to your children, and you're not going to see fruit, you know, on that right away. You're betting on the idea that eventually you're loving them and you're caring for them, and all the different ideas, wisdom, and teachings that you give over that will help build them into strong, healthy, productive adults. But you're not going to see evidence of that until years down the road, because they're still going to be children for a long time. And so I think that this story identifies the fact that a therapist becomes a relationship in a child's life, and that can lead to change even years down the road. The person could say, look, when I was coming to you, I remember we did all these things, and you know, I never practiced, I was never interested, but you know, I just went out for the college debate team and I started doing some of those things that we were talking about, and they're really helpful. So the image here is planting instead of building, putting seeds in there. So when there's time for the child to blossom, you know, you've been a fertilizer, you've been a seed, but you've got to be patient and wait. I don't think we can force people to change.
Will you allow me just one more question?
Sure.
So do you have any specific way, or is there a general way, I guess I should say, you know, I'm going to start this over again. For the parents of a child, or to the teacher who may just view speech therapy as, we're sending him to you to make him stop stuttering, how would you explain this to that parent who, you know, wants the best for their child and might just assume that means, you know, they come to my room to stop stuttering, period?
I don't think you can explain to a parent who's panicked and concerned about the well-being of their child, you can explain to them that it's okay to leave it alone. I think better than that would be to empathize with their desire to try to help their child be free of a challenge in their life, be free of a problem. So I think point one is to empathize with that position. Again, you and I are parents, and we know that we don't want our kids to have problems. We don't want them to be sad. We don't want them to struggle. We don't want them to feel badly about themselves. So any of us as parents would want our kids to not have a problem. So I think we start by saying, you know, by empathizing with them, not by trying. So it's sort of a counseling approach, which isn't a counseling meaning we're going to share information and tell them what percentage of kids are ready later. And we tell them that, look, you know, have them talk about what their visions are of how it's going to be hurtful to the child. Let them talk it out. Let them talk about their fears. Let them talk about do they think there's any possibility things would change in a positive direction? So I think step one there, and this is not a simple one, but I think it's powerful that you bring it up, because it means we have an obligation to be present for parents of kids, even those kids who are not ready for therapeutic change, to support those parents and we can validate their concerns, meaning we tell them, yes, I appreciate that that's scary for you. Tell me a little bit about what you think is going to happen. And sometimes in exploring their concern, you find out that the kid's really doing okay. Then they say, we're afraid he won't speak out, or he won't have friends, and he won't do well in school. Well, how is he doing in school? How is he doing when he's in the playground, or when he gets together with some kids? So in exploring it with them, you provide them a source of support, not because you're going to fix them or take away their concern or their problem, but you're going to be supportive in giving them an opportunity to talk about it, and not just tell them, oh, it's nothing, it's just this, he's not got terminal illness. So I think that just validating their concern, giving them a chance to talk about it and explore it, allowing them asking you questions and hearing, you know, a nuanced, honest approach to the fact that stuttering, often people grow up and find ways to manage better, some people sooner, some later, and anything's possible at any time. I think that can really be very helpful to them dealing with a tough situation.
Wow. Thank you, Phil. I always feel so much better after speaking to you about these challenging but good issues. So thank you.
You're welcome, and I always appreciate the opportunity to share these things.